everyone. Welcome to episode 10 of the Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast here on the Believe Podcast Network, Southern California's number one sports podcast network, the only place with a show for every team in Southern California and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? Yes, so it's episode 10. I am your co-host, Anthony Gelli. Alongside me today is Kent Huskins, and we have a very special guest. She is the host of the Totally Offsides podcast, formerly of the K-Rock Kevin and Bean Morning Show, and now also working at The Athletic. Please welcome Chip.
You forgot world-class goalie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Crap, I had that in my nose too. I was going to be like aspiring beer league goalie, and I screwed the pooch on that one. My bad. But anyway, we are here. Kent, how you doing today?
Doing well, thanks. Yeah, just working through some morning issues as always at the coffee shop here. And we're actually not in our little alcove over in the the conference room. We're in the shop now. I've got my back turned. So I won't know what's going wrong behind me. So
I'll tell you if something explodes or if something's starting to smoke. But it's funny how the problems always arise in the morning with the coffee shop.
It's never evening. Yeah, exactly. I guess it's prime time. And last Saturday, prime example, had to jet mid broadcast. We had some issues. A late arrival. The old dreaded Saturday morning shift hurt someone there last week. So we had a no-show, so yeah, I had to jump back there, and yeah, I guess it's all part of the fun.
Kent was playing extra minutes behind the behind the barista counter yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. But
today's topics, we're going to talk to Chip just about her general life as a Ducks fan and her podcast. We're going to talk the OT loss to Chicago and the regulation loss to Minnesota. We're going to go over Andre Kasha a little bit, his return to the lineup. And then we're going to look ahead at the next week of big games. We've got the Oilers. You get to see McDavid and Draisaitl coming up. Then we've got, I call it the Kent Huskins Bowl Jr., Red Wings versus Ducks. And then the main event, the Kent Huskins Bowl, Sharks versus Ducks. And then we've got the Blues. The St. Louis Blues, Stanley Cup champions. So we're going to look ahead to all those, and then we'll have the three stars segment. So I think we're having a longer podcast today than normal, but it will be worth it. So first, Chip, let's get to your, let's get to you, and just kind of go over. So we spoke about this the other day. You want to talk about how you became a Ducks fan? Obviously, you grew up here in Orange County, but how did you go about happening?
Well, like as a kid in the 90s in Orange County, like it would. It's obviously the Mighty Ducks movies. Like that's how I got into hockey. And then we had a cul-de-sac in front of our house. We'd play street hockey, trying to do the triple deeks and trying to do the knuckle pucks and all that stuff. But I didn't really get into hockey like watching live because my parents were never into hockey as a kid, so I never went to the games. But as I was in college and had like the time and stuff, I can't remember like exactly what year it was. It might have been. I think I told you 10, but then I realized, oh, it's been even longer than that. I'm older. But it was a Ducks Stars game for my friend's birthday party. I had to be like a freshman or sophomore in college, and I'm like, oh my God, hockey is the best. So ever since then, I've been a huge Ducks fan.
Back, that was probably, you said 07, 08 or 09?
I'd say probably actually like 06, 07. Yeah.
Who is your favorite Duck from that era? And don't look across the table. There's no pressure.
Now.
There's no pressure.
You know the answer.
Well, you gotta go Husky, right?
Yeah.
Man, I wouldn't even say then like I was a super involved Ducks fan just because I was going to school full time. I was working at Disneyland full time. I was a character. That's where Chip. I don't know if I ever told you. That's where Chip comes from. Because I was a character at Disneyland at the same time. So I was going to school full-time, working full-time. And that's like I don't know if I ever told Husky this, but I wasn't even able to really celebrate the cup win because I was working. Like,
wow.
Work and school.
Really?
Yeah, so like that's why I keep saying the Ducks need to win again so I can celebrate properly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, yeah.
like Chip from Chip and Dale?
Yeah.
There you go. That was one of my favorites. And Husky, feel free to make your case about why you should have been her favorite player.
No, I probably absolutely should not have been. There were a lot of good candidates on that team.
Do you have a memory from when you became a Ducks fan so far, your favorite Ducks memory?
So one of the funniest stories, so obviously when I worked for Kevin and Bean, I was the Ducks fan amongst, obviously, a Los Angeles, everyone else a Kings fan. And the best thing was every season, once or twice a season, Getsy would call in. And the funny thing about him was, you know, obviously they'd give you crap about the Ducks all the time, but they would get the ask of, hey, do you want to have Getzloff on? And Kevin would always go, stupid Ducks. But I love Getzloff, okay. And so he would always come on, and he was always great. And at one point, I think it was like two seasons ago, after the Ducks lost to the Preds in the playoffs, and the Kings didn't make it that season. So to start the next season off, Getzy called in, and Kevin made a comment about, you know, he's like, man, this offseason felt so long as a Kings fan, blah, blah, blah. And then Getzy said, we had some fun though, right, Chip? And like, just like, totally just like, so it was always fun when he called in, because yeah, like, I think he knew because I was in the studio, he would make some digs at Kevin and Allie, and so that was always super fun.
That's great. Could you talk about kind of you mentioned a little bit, but the hockey kind of subculture amongst Kevin and Bean in that show? It seems like, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Allie went to school in the Northeast, but she's from here. Kevin and Bean were Kings fans. I didn't know that. It's just kind of an interesting part of the show.
And it's funny, too, because between Allie and Kevin and I, like, and Muggs is a Kings fan, too, but even, like, during like, commercial breaks and stuff, like, we'd always talk about, like, oh, did you go to the game last night? Like, Bean would always go, like, would you guys stop with the hockey? Like, but, yeah, Allie, her parents live out east, but she was born and raised here. Her family, I don't remember exactly how long, but they've been Kings season ticket holders since she was a kid. So she goes back way, you know, way far back. And then I think Kevin became a Kings fan because Kevin and Bean were from Arizona, and they came over here to start the show. And he came, you know, in like 1990, and then he was a huge Kings fan. So he goes to the games all the time, and he's taken me with him a couple times. And it's fun just to kind of have, like, everyone, Kevin and Bean, we kind of like had a connection for, like, you know, music and movies and stuff. But then between me, Allie, and Kevin, it was always talking about hockey.
I don't know. I'll ask you this now, and I'll give you some time to think about it, and we'll kind of filter this question in later. But on the topic of the music, if the Ducks were a band, and we'll get back to this in a little bit, and Kent and I will start discussing, and you can think about it. Who would they be? And on that note, Kent, I think we let's get to this this first game.
That's a tough question.
Yeah, I know. I felt like the last full disclosure. I interviewed Chip for a project I'm working on just a couple days ago, and I put her on the spot there too. So it's pretty much.
He's gonna put me on the spot for a lot of things.
Yeah, it's not intentional. I just call me an impolite interviewer. I don't warn anyone about what's going on. So, feel free to chime in as well on this discussion. OT lost to Chicago. Once again, a late comeback by the Ducks, but they fall short in overtime. What were your thoughts on that game, first of all?
Well, I think the story of the night was probably the Getzloff 1,000th game. I mean, that's such a milestone, and for such an unbelievable guy, as Chip mentioned, and just... you know, for the caliber of player that he is, and that's what... you know, I'm partial, but you hear it from a variety of sports fans too. And, you know, just you get a caliber of, you know, surefire kind of Hall of Famer like Getzy, and unbelievable career, cup winner, two-time Olympic champion. Like, the resume kind of goes on and on, but just a great guy, treats everyone, you know, like gold, just a great person, great captain, teammate, leader, example for the young guys. I think done it all for this franchise, and play 1,000 games with one team is pretty insane out this day and age. So just a cool night for him. A big milestone there. So that was great. As far as the scope of the game, I think if you take a step back and look at the calendar of the Ducks for this month. Some pretty tough stretches, and I think these were two games you would kind of hope for a couple wins. Chicago game, I think. I mean, they've got a good team. Obviously, Patrick Kane's still worth the price of admission in itself. Like, that guy's still an incredible player. Him and Taves, the way they connected on that overtime. Winner, still getting it done. Obviously not the dominance that they once had, but you see flashes every once in a while. But I think, yeah, it kind of had to be a bit of a disappointment, but that's the nature of the league. Now there's no gimmies for sure, and I think these were two, like I said, you would hope for a couple wins with these games, and it didn't work out. But I mean, it was a good game, close game, lots of back and forth. Both goalies played well. Miller played great again. But yeah, I think in the Ducks' case, it seems like they, like most teams that are kind of scratching and clawing in that kind of middle ground, it's, I think the tough part is not always getting up for and beating the teams ahead of you. It's that, you know, you beat a team, have a nice win against a top 10 team, but then the next night you've got someone that's below you, and all of a sudden you go from the hunter to the hunted, and that's a tough role to be in, because you know you're getting someone else's best the next night, and not always easy to get up the same way for a team that's ahead of you as a team that's maybe towards the bottom of the league. And I think we saw a little bit of that with just some lapses in those two games. And I just think overall, I'd circled this kind of early in the year that a huge key for the Ducks was going to be the health of Manson and Lindholm. And now that Manson's out, I think you just see kind of what he brings to the table when he's in. And just it kind of just messes up some of the matchups and gets guys kind of playing outside their roles a little bit. I thought for the most part they've done a great job. I think Goodbranson's done well coming in. Delzato is a name I have circled every week that I want to talk about, and we never really get to, but I think he's done an awesome job for the Ducks. It's kind of an under the radar signing this summer. And I'd love to get him on to talk to him here about that sequence of his the last kind of couple years of his career, but yeah, I just think the Manson loss is kind of showing the results of that over the past few games. But so that's kind of what I have basically for the Chicago game. What'd you see?
Well, actually, I wanted to pick up on something Chip mentioned to me earlier. You were talking about getting up for games and the level of opponent, but Chip, you actually noticed, and I'm sure a lot of other Ducks fans have, that they tend not to play well during certain situations. I'll let you go over that one.
Yeah, it seems like the big, like, you know, with Getzlaf's 1,000th game or Kariya's jersey retirement, stuff like that, those games the Ducks seem to come out flat every time. I think maybe the Niedermeyer I think they may have won that one, but it seems like in general those big kind of milestone games, they kind of just for whatever reason they just don't show up.
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting point. I think like hockey, kind of like all sports, I mean there's a lot of it's an emotional game, I think, and a lot of times when you kind of take the emotion out of the game and just kind of focus on squarely what you're doing. Shift in, shift out, and you're kind of playing with that little bit of an edge where you're not really thinking about winning the game necessarily, as weird as that sounds. You just kind of focus on what you're doing. I think you hear that a lot in hockey interviews, about staying in the moment and all that kind of stuff that we hear all the time. But I think that's why. And it also, another factor is I think when you have those long ceremonies and it affects your kind of pregame preparation from a physical standpoint too, and I know both teams have to deal with it, but yeah, that's an interesting and it, because I think in those scenarios sometimes you want to there's probably a tendency as a human being to want to win that one extra for Getzy, and I think at that point maybe there comes to be some times where you could press a little bit and start trying things that you wouldn't normally try, and then things kind of start to unravel a little bit when that starts happening. So maybe that's a reason, but yeah, it's that is kind of an oddity for sure, and not something you would expect.
And you mentioned the Manson loss, him being out of the lineup, and I'm wondering if Eakins was trying to rustle up a little bit more offense. He had a couple moments out there where he had Getzlaf, Terry, Raquel, so he's got He had two centers out there. I think it was Getzlaf, Steel, Raquel at one point, and they scored that one of the goals against Chicago. I know it's kind of normal sometimes to have two centers out there for a draw in case someone gets chased, an important draw, and then one of them quickly changes, but they kept him out there for a while. Do you think that's kind of a push to try to get some extra offense when you're lacking on the defensive end?
Yeah, I think that's... I always like that coaching strategy, and I think it's just a matter of trying to, if things feel like they're a little stale and the chemistry's not there for that night, it's just a way to kind of shake things up and see if you can find some chemistry, putting different guys together and just trying different combinations to see if you can just get a little spark, even if it is for a period, and you kind of know you have that basic roster framework of the lines you're going to kind of have night in, night out. But if you can... If you see something from a couple of guys or just see some chemistry that they've noticed in practice, maybe different guys kind of going together that they can just kind of draw on and see if they can try it out in a game and get something out of it. So I think it does help on draws, I guess. But I think that the main reason is just trying to find a spark and find some extra offense.
So moving on to the loss to Minnesota, the Andre Kasha return from the jaw injury. The Ducks get two quick goals, take a 2-0 lead, and then kind of squander it slowly. It felt like death by 1,000 paper cuts, and then all of a sudden it's a regulation loss to one of the struggling teams in the NHL. And you mentioned the opportunity that the Ducks had to kind of beat two teams, but it's that were at the bottom of the standings. But you were mentioning it can be kind of hard. I mean, it seems like... maybe I'm wrong on this, that they play down to their competition sometimes and up when they're playing against more competitive teams.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And they definitely wouldn't be the first team in history that's the case. I think that's a common issue and why there's so much parity in the league. I think that this one was a tough one, and the fact they've got to kind of sit on it for a few days here and coming into a tough stretch for next week. But sometimes it's you can turn that around and have that extra kind of focus and drive and turn that into a few good days of practice and use that to kind of benefit long term. But yeah, I think just the way that kind of game went, it's pretty frustrating. You kind of feel the frustration from the guys and the fans as well. It's up 2-0 and things look like they're going well, I think. And then it's 2-1, and then the turning point, the turn of events was Zuccarello's goal, where they're coming the tail end of a power play. You're trying to make a play. And then all of a sudden in the span of a couple seconds, it goes from you're on offense, the puck's in your net, just to kind of a tough play there. You're trying to make a play and you always want guys to be aggressive, and that's great. But that's kind of the flip side of that I talk about sometimes, with that being aggressive, sometimes it's not going to work out. And then all of a sudden, they zip the puck up the ice for a breakaway coming out of the box and it's 2-2. And then that's a pretty deflating one, and then you're kind of scrambling and give up 3-2, and then the empty netter, and all of a sudden, you're on the wrong end of a 4-2 loss to one of the bottom teams in the league. So tough one for sure, but I guess like I say, hopefully they can turn that into a good few days of practice, which I think has been their MO this year. They've been resilient when things haven't gone well, and always kind of seem to respond. Seems like an upbeat group, upbeat coaching staff. Everything's kind of high energy, not getting bogged down too much. So I'm curious to see how they come out in these upcoming games. So I think we can expect a good bounce back.
Absolutely. And having Andre Kasha in the lineup is going to be a big plus. It was interesting. Eric Stevens had an article out at The Athletic this past week about, I guess, if Kasha should change his style of play, his aggressive kind of bowling ball style that's resulted in some concussions. A jaw injury is the most recent one. And he had a quote from Hampus Lindholm that it kind of has my head tied in knots. Like, it seems like a very, very elaborate way to say just keep your head on a swivel. But let me know if there's any inside baseball on this. He was referring to some advice Scott Niedermeyer gave him. Said it's something Niedermeyer actually told me. If you pass the puck, always take one stride in the direction where you have your eyes, because if you pass and you're looking down where you're passing without turning your head that way, that's when you get the straight-on collisions when you're not ready. And when you're not ready, your body's all relaxed, and that's when you get usually real banged up. That was real good advice, and that helped me through a lot. Like, I get the whole, like, relaxed body, and you get this when you get... But, like, you're just saying keep your head on a swivel there, right?
I kind of was reading that quote, too, and I'm like, man, if Scotty said it, that's, like, the gospel. Like, you take that, and you do it. Like, I'm like... anything that guy says is correct. That was always my basis, and I think a good way to go about things. But yeah, no, I read through that quote a couple times, and I think it makes sense that that's basically the gist of it. But I was thinking back to what I played, and yeah, I mean, if you so basically, if you're skating a straight line and you're passing to your right, and you passed it, and so you see a guy open to your right, and you pass it to your right, I think that the idea is that you don't keep skating straight, because that's when you can get blindsided, and that definitely happened to me more than one occasion. I think, not that you're admiring your pass, but maybe a little bit, I guess. Like, wow, that's a nice pass. Oh, right on the tape. Yeah, way to go, Husky. And then, bam. No, always good advice, and that's awesome that he was that Hampus was kind of astute enough to take that advice from that source and apply it to his game from such a young age and still remember it today. I think that it's so important to be a student of the game and to kind of continually learn and be able to take things from sources like that, like a Scotty or a Pronger or veteran guys or coaches when they tell you stuff on video, and to be able to kind of take that and stick it to the memory bank and apply it to your game moving forward, it's just going to kind of keep helping you become a better and better player. So that's cool to hear him quote that.
Do you remember a specific hit that you absorbed in that type of situation, one that stands out in your head where you're like, oh God, like it gives you nightmares?
I think there was one. It was actually towards the tough thing was my last couple years I played in the minors, so I went back and played for, I had a couple of buddies that were coaching in Vancouver's farm team, and they're actually Travis Green and Noah Baumgartner, who are head coach and assistant coach along with Newell Brown of the Canucks now, who are having an awesome season, great team to watch. But yeah, so I was basically trying to get back to the NHL. So I went and played a couple of years in the American League, and we had a great time. And it actually turned into a cool experience for me, kind of going from being the beneficiary of all those good advice and moments from being taught from some of the best, to be able to kind of flip that and help out some of the Vancouver's young prospects, hopefully, and at least kind of work alongside them and kind of have that reverse relationship with some of their young prospects. It was a cool experience to be able to kind of at least feel like you're kind of giving back a little bit. It was cool. But the flip side of that is you don't know who anyone is. Like, you know, like all the young young guys, you have no idea who's a fighter, who's a scorer, like whose number. You don't recognize any names. So I mean, I got caught a couple times not knowing who different guys were, and I think in the NHL, you just have to be so on your toes. There's no room for any kind of lapse in concentration. Where I think in the American League, as a veteran guy, you can kind of set it in cruise control sometimes, and I mean, it's just not always on your kind of pinpoint on your toes, and just kind of get lulled to sleep, but I don't know, lulled to sleep a little bit. And then, so I think, yeah, there were a couple of times where I didn't know who I was on the ice with, and one of these kids that are like, and it's not like they're 6'5", but they're like 5'11", but like 240. And they just like catch a piece of me, and I go like helicoptering into the corner. My stick goes flying. I was like all embarrassed, but hey, just gotta shake it off and remember that number.
Yeah, the yard sale. I thought you were gonna say, oh, I taught a couple of AHL rookies some valuable lessons there. Keep their head down.
Well, yeah. That, you'd tell them what to do, and then go out and then a shift on like the Sunday of. It's like in the American League, the games were set up so you'd have like four games in 5 nights with like 3 or 4 hour bus time. So the bus would be at 2 p.m. leaving Utica to go to like Albany. And then you'd have to get off the bus and play against like, I'm like 35 and these kids are all like 20 and just like fly around and like been sleeping in their apartments all day. And I've been like trying to unfold my legs from the back of the bus and figure out where I am in Albany, New York. And then, just kind of on those Sunday games were tough. And that's when you'd usually get caught a little sleepy.
Meanwhile, all the Albany players are like, Jesus, get me out of here. Like, they're all a bundle of energy. Like, I got to play hard so I don't have to be in friggin' Albany anymore.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's all just like everyone's just chomping at the bit. I mean, you either have guys that are so hungry to stay there, just because you're one step from the NHL, or guys that are just have their lives are centered around making that next step. And I mean, there's scouts at every game, and it's a really good league too, the AHL. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I know the KHL's high skilled and everything, but the AHL's a really, really good league. And if you were sleeping sometimes like me, like you'd get caught. And, so yeah, I mean they're good players and everyone's hungry, and like I say, their lives are centered around either staying there or getting to the next level. So everyone's always hungry. That's why they call it the Always Hungry League.
All right. So moving on to the upcoming week, we got a few games. We've had almost a week off. I want to say 5 days since we got to see the Ducks play. Chip, are there any games you're looking forward to this week between Edmonton, San Jose, Detroit, and St. Louis specifically?
I would like to see how, you know, because the Oilers, what, are they top of the Pacific right now? Yeah. I'd like to see, like, these new kids, like, the younger kids just attest against a team like that. And, you know, Connor McDavid is always just insane to watch. But, like, you know, like, you guys were talking about earlier, like, they seem, like, to play up to, you know, like the Vancouver game was 7-4, and, like, you play up to the teams that are flying high. So it'd be nice to have a test against another team like that.
And I wonder, too, depending on how they combine McDavid and Draisaitl, if they combine Fowler and Lindholm on the defensive, because the Oilers don't have a lot of depth. And so if you shut down that first line, I think you're in good shape. So if they're playing together. So I'm wondering, do you think if they do play those two together, that they'll pair Fowler and Lindholm together?
I think you'll definitely see Lindholm for sure. It'll be interesting to see. I wonder if I haven't watched basically a single Oilers game this year, so I don't really know. I definitely, like you mentioned, they're definitely a top-heavy team with two of the best players in the league on one team. It'll be interesting to see who they put out defensively as well as forward lines too. I think it would be a good challenge for no matter who they throw out there, but that's a tough matchup regardless. So it'd be a good test for the boys.
I think on my end, I'm curious to see how they play against St. Louis. That's obviously the test. Everyone puts the target on the Stanley Cup champions back. I think more so than the offensive skill, I'm curious to see how the Ducks respond against such a physical team. The Ducks have been physical this season. They've got Gabranson. Manson's obviously out of the lineup, but they've had, and Comtois, Getzlaff, and Richie are physical. Yeah, there you go. So they've got some physicality, but the Blues want to knock you through the end of the rink. They want to dump the puck in, just pulverize you in the corners, even more so now that I think Tarasenko is out. So I'm looking forward to see how the Ducks respond at the end of a difficult week, because I think that's the final game this week, 4 games. So that's going to be my kind of what I'm looking out for.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that's going to be a big test. Obviously, some some important games through this week, and then it looks like what's shaping up to be a pretty tough road trip, a good challenge there. But the Ducks had a tough road trip earlier in the season and played some of their best hockey. So, like I say, they seem to kind of rise to the occasion. But, yeah, some tough tests this week with the Red Wings that have kind of been playing up and down and kind of not sure what you're going to get from them on a nightly basis, but definitely not, I think, the doormat that people thought they were going to be this year. They've been playing some good hockey. The Sharks are kind of still trying to kind of find some traction and find their footing a little bit, kind of waiting for things to kind of jump off there. I think they've got a lot of good pieces in place, but just trying to find that chemistry. They're more of a kind of, I would say, built for more of kind of the stretch run, for more kind of November through February. But I know they had a tough start last year as well, so it's not like they've never been here before, and they've a lot of names on that roster. It's some pretty good players up there. So I don't think they're dead in the water as some people are writing them off. I think they've still got some stuff left in the tank for sure. But yeah, the Blues game will definitely be interesting. I think that's a Saturday night game in St. Louis. That's going to be a tough one. But yeah, I think we've seen the Ducks' ability to rise to the occasion. So that'll be a good one.
Yeah, and a little history that could be made. I mean, kind of history against the Red Wings. The Ducks haven't swept the Red Wings since the 14-15 season. So maybe a little bit of motivation there. They have a chance to win it and sweep the season series with them. But let's get back to a couple more Chip questions, since we haven't had you on before.
The band question.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for this.
Keep the band. I'm trying to keep the balls like juggling a little bit.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're still thinking,
I think I've got kind of an answer. So my first approach to try and pick up what the band would be like, I was trying to think of a band that had like an older frontman surrounded by newer bandmates. I couldn't think of one. Like Social Distortion, like Mike Ness is the only original member, then everyone else behind him. But they've been around for that lineup's been around for a few years. So instead, my other approach was looking at John Gibson. I would say the Ducks right now are kind of like the Vandals, where you have the best drummer in the world. What's in front of them sometimes doesn't always come together. You're gonna have a good show and you're gonna have fun watching it. Sometimes it's a little bit of a train wreck, but you go and you just have fun anyway. And I think that's what the Ducks are like, the Vandals.
Wow, good answer.
I like that. Yeah, Chip wanted to know where you think the Ducks are this season. What's been your general impression of them?
Well, I think coming in, like, I was just excited to see a team that is fast. I mean, not just is fast, but plays faster. It's, from a Ducks fan perspective, even I came into this going, okay, they may not get a playoff spot this year, but the growth is there, and just being able to go to games and just have fun watching it, that's been like the big takeaway. Seeing the kids come out and, you know, the power play and the penalty kill can use some help, but seeing these kids out here playing, you know, real minutes and kind of gelling and the team going in that direction, kind of see the growth of it, I think it's really cool. Like, you know, last year was kind of a slog to get through, and you're going to games and you're like, this is just, okay.
How many shots can I give up?
Yeah, like, poor Gibby. Just give him a break. But I just think, as far as the season go, like, I wouldn't say I had low expectations. I just knew it would be a season of growth, but I'm having a good time watching them grow.
Yeah, well said.
Have you been surprised by anyone specifically that's kind of hopped onto the Ducks roster and played a bigger role?
So far, I just love seeing. Trying to think of who would.
You're on the spot again.
Yeah, you're good at this.
Email you these questions, but that's not really.
That's not your style, man.
Yeah. Exactly.
Let's see. I think is Gooley still down in with the goals right now?
They moved him down. Last week.
Yeah.
He's played a significant amount of time with the Ducks, and I think.
But the first chunk of the season, I think watching him play has been great. I'd like to see him come back up, but then just see Terry and Steele and everyone get more comfortable, like that's been cool.
Have you been disappointed by anyone in particular? I mean, I'll I'll stall for a little bit. She's got her thinking cap on. There. All right, here we go.
I would like to see... I mean, Richie has been better as far as offensive penalties and stuff, but I'd like to see less of that from him. But, I mean, he has been doing better. Like, I know, like, a lot last year was a lot of people going, like, oh, trade him, get rid of him, blah, blah, blah. And after he, you know, he held out for a little bit of the first part of the season, and he came in, I think he, you know, he signed that new contract, and I think he's learned from that a little bit, but I still think we could probably get a little more out of him.
At the risk of being crucified by Ducks fans, I wonder if he's a little bit like Brad Marchand in that last year he toned down the penalties for a lot of the season, had a kind of a disappointing, I mean, he also had the holdout, but had a disappointing offensive season. I wonder if he's the type of guy who needs to mix it up and maybe be a little bit of a loose cannon to be engaged in the game and score. I mean, is that your impression maybe, Kent?
Yeah, I think that's probably not too far off. I mean, there are definitely guys that play like that, and you want you definitely want the discipline, and I guess the finer you can walk that line, and I guess that's a skill that you got to kind of manage yourself a little bit, and as you kind of gain experience and grow as a player and get a little older as a human being, you kind of get to know yourself a little more and how you can kind of walk that line a little more finer, where you're not kind of going over the edge. But I guess that's they have always talked about guys playing kind of on the edge or with an edge, I do picture him. It's a good point. Like, I think he is that type of personality and that type of player where if you can kind of find a way to get as close to that edge where you kind of are engaged in the game and you kind of have your personal battles going on and that's what kind of fuels your game, and you need that and to be able to find a way to do that without going over that edge. Because, I do think there is a correlation that we've seen from him, that when he is battling and chirping and getting into it after the whistle and kind of going after guys on the other team, that's when he kind of plays some of his best, and that does translate into kind of playing with that bit of a mean streak. So, I think as he continues to develop that, he'll keep growing as a player.
He's not nearly as much of a rat as Marchand did. He's not as dirty or anything like that. So he's not. He's more of a I'll say on the legal, less annoying side of things. But he is. He does like to mix things up.
He's got to find his Perry balance.
Yeah, there you go. The Perry quotient. Yeah. All right. So let's get to the 3 stars segment that we didn't get to do last week. I like this one. I kind of thought over this one a lot because I didn't want to go over with the obvious answers. But the 3 best celebrations in your memory or that you've watched or been experienced in the NHL. Or it could be international, somewhere, wherever.
All right. I was reading your notes. I like yours, too. There was one on there specifically that I forgot, which was epic scenario, which is great. My 3 was... A couple of Ducks alumni, well-known guys. The first one that I think, as we all kind of mimicked it as kids, was the Solani when he threw the goal up and shot it with the stick. That's kind of an iconic one. Always remember, and just kind of just so innovative and like nothing that had been done in hockey, but it was like okay because it was Timu and everyone loved the guy and he was so unbelievably sick at hockey and scoring goals, and just like to have that kind of flash and pull off that celebration after reaching the milestone that he just did. I think that was a really cool moment for hockey. Second one was one of my favorite, another one that we always talked about growing up and mimicked on the outdoor rink and street hockey and et cetera, was the May Day goal, Brad May, with the call by one of the best announcers too, Rick Jenneret in Buffalo. That call and the fact that he just like walked Ray Bourque and went in and like scored and then took off up the ice with Jenneret screaming like Mayday, and just the energy of it all was that was just awesome celebration. And then the third one, I tried to think of something personal. I didn't have too many goals. Let alone like scenarios where I was thinking ahead of time what I would do if I would score. So I had to go back to kind of the college days. And I think it was my junior year. I don't know, you're kind of still a bit of an idiot in college, right? And I was kind of like, what? And all of our buddies, it was back, I don't know if you guys remember, but there was this big controversy, especially in college sports, where it was like the throat slit. And it was like so like taboo, like frowned upon, like guys were getting suspended for doing the throat slit. And then, or should they not get suspended? Like what's... And then, I don't know, we were playing like RPI in Clarkson, and I think we were up 6-3, and I scored, I think, to go up like 7-3 or something. And I turned to the bench, and like, I'm just like, just to be stupid, I like something we could all laugh about, I did the throat slit, and I was just like, oh God, I was just thinking about,
I never would have,
oh my God, just thinking about it after, like, what an idiot, like, yeah, so stupid. But we had a laugh about it, and I don't know, I didn't get suspended or anything. But and another one was one of my buddies, so it was actually when we went to that game and watched a Calgary game, the guy sitting on our left was a scout named Jerry O'Flaherty, for Tampa, and I played with his nephew Kevin O'Flaherty. So that's, I was kind of still thinking about that while I was thinking about my three stars. I just remembered, so Clarkson was playing St. Lawrence, which is our epic rival in upstate New York. So there's Potsdam and Canton that are small college towns. Each school has Division I hockey. Hockey was the only Division I sport. I think that's still the case. But so huge, huge rivalry in upstate New York. So the Clarkson-St. Lawrence game is always kind of circled. And I think we were over in St. Lawrence, and I think we beat them 1-0. And Kevin O'Flaherty, my buddy, scored, and he did the shush. He did like the shh, like with the finger to the lips. Yeah. Oh, so just seeing Jerry O'Flaherty, thinking of Kevin O'Flaherty, talking about goal celebration, that was the one that I thought was the shh. That was always one of my favorites, and just another funny one. So those were mine. And I want to, you got some good ones here too, though. I want to hear your three here.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to think hard about this. In a way, I was a little relieved that we delayed it to this week, because I was going to go with the obvious ones last week, and I wanted to put more thought into it. You got, obviously, your Bobby Orr's, you got your Solanis. The Yzerman OT goal, when I want to say it was 96 or 97, to beat the Blues. That, I mean, I know it's kind of a legendary goal, but it was also just such a euphoric, like, outburst. Like, the whole stadium is going nuts. He's kind of, like, doing this weird, like, gallop jog into the corner, and you've got like the camera angle where he's kind of coming around after that like laser of a shot.
Yeah,
that just, everything that's so organic and such an awesome goal celebration to me, it's just like pure joy. Yeah. there's nothing more exciting than that. So that was number one for sure for me. Second one, the Marek Milik shootout goal where he went between the legs and like round 9 million of the shootout.
So awesome.
But that was such a cocky goal. But then the celebration, he just kind of puts his arms out and looks around like the gladiator, like, are you not entertained? Yeah, like, so he was awesome. Just like, yeah, I knew I could do this. Nobody thought I could do it, but I did it. So what now?
Yeah.
So and great. Then the bird, the Kuznetsov, it's kind of awkward. Like it's just kind of like he, I don't know, does he drop his stick? No, he holds his stick and he just kind of flaps his shit. It's like the chicken dance, but I like it. Like when he beat Pittsburgh in overtime, like he did that. And that was the first, I think he'd been doing it before, but that was the first time I'd seen it. And I was like, that, I don't know. I guess that's cool.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah.
Like,
you just got to commit. That's the thing. If you do half ass it, it's not going to look any amount of cool.
Yeah,
but
true.
If you just go all out for it, then it works. Anything can work.
Do you have any that you can think of, and you could go with the obvious or the not so obvious or whatever you want?
Yeah, I would say like the Solani one was the first one for sure that came to my mind. But also, as you were talking about, like as far as like pure like crowd elated and everything like that, the comeback on Cotella when Perry scored in the double overtime, and just the way he turned back and like everyone just like mobbed him and the whole crowd, like I think for me like that, to the one that my favorite one that I've witnessed was his double overtime winner.
Absolutely. So I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Flying V podcast. We're going to come back next week, probably, hopefully, with some more interviews. We're still working on more interviews. We've got some ideas. Obviously, this one was awesome. Thank you, Chip, for coming.
Thanks, Chip.
That was unbelievable.
Oh, thank you. I'm coming back next week. Sorry.
Yeah, she's actually a returning cast member. The totally off-size Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast. There we go. I like it. As always, you can find me at DeliTweets on Twitter. You can find Kent on Instagram. I'll let him give you his.
Yeah, Husqvarna, H-U-S-K underscore V-E-R-N-A. No post in the last 3 weeks, but it's there. The account is there.
And if you follow Kent and I, odds are you probably already follow Chip, but here's Chip's social media info.
Any of the same handle for everything. It's That Girl Chip.
And you're still doing episodes of Totally Offsides when you get the chance, right?
Yeah, I'm working on bringing it back because I had to switch hold. If anyone is good at Apple Podcasts, I have a problem I need. If anyone knows how to, I've been posting my podcast through SoundCloud now, so Spotify, all those other things. iTunes keeps rejecting mine. So I don't know why, but if anyone's good at Apple Podcasts and figuring out how to fix my podcast, that'd be really helpful.
And apparently, you've upset Steve Jobs from the grave. He's coming back after you. And finally, you can find us on all your favorite podcast directories. Excuse me, a little bit of brain fart there. iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Luminary, and TuneIn. iTunes, how do you like that, Chip? There you go. You can find ours on iTunes. What now?
Yeah, it got big times.
Big times, but she's still about probably 2,000 more listeners than we have on a regular basis. So it's all's well that ends well. Finally, you can find us at Believe.com and at Believe Podcasts on your social accounts. That'll do it for us. We'll see you next week.